It's Emily here, and today I want to invite you to make sure to check out Robinhood Integrative Health. If you are a resident of the Winston-Salem, North Carolina area, and you're looking for a doctor who treats you differently, looks deeper into the issues that you're having, and seeks to hear you as a person and really help to get you better, then I can't recommend Robinhood Integrative Health, where Dr. Wiggy practices, enough. Make sure that you go to their website and see how you can benefit from their services today. And did you know that they even take some insurances, which basically never happens in integrative medicine? So make sure to check them out and enjoy the episode.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Healthy Discourse. It's Emily here, and I'm very excited to welcome today's guest to the show. We have with us today Dr. Joe Jenkins and Janine Finelli, and they work, and well, Dr. Joe helped found, and Janine is an employee and an important part of the team at a company called Doable. Janine, you told me best earlier, so what is Doable?
Thank you. Yes, great to be here. Doable is a company that helps people to feel their best, manage anxiety and burnout. How do we do that? Through coaching, technology, lab testing, and really building like-minded communities.
Yeah. One of the things I love about Dr. Joe is when we were first beginning our North Carolina Physicians for Freedom Coalition, he came to Wiggy's office and he was one of those first few that sat around the circle and said, we got to do something different around here in North Carolina. So I love Dr. Joe for that, and his team is wonderful, and your company has evolved a lot over time, and I love all of the things that you're doing, and you guys have helped us in our medical practice with some corporate endeavors to help provide better insurance for employees and all kinds of things. You guys have a lot going on there, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later, but today's topic, which you brought to me, is one of my favorites, and that is all around community. People are desperately, desperately needing more community. We have a facade of community through things like social media and the doom scrolling that we do on our phones, and these connections we have through all kinds of technology, but people are lacking in real life community so much. And we're going to talk about that today. So
you're on a roll, Emily.
I just got a roll. So, I told them before we started, this is my favorite topic. When I am on all of the social media and everything, it saddens me inside of all these closed groups of all different types of mostly women that I'm in, and I mean, over half the posts are, I've lived here for 3 years and I know no one, and this kind of thing, or I can't find any friends and that sort of thing. And Dr. Joe, I know you said that you have a great how we got here speech. And then, so maybe tell us a little bit about how we got here. And then Janine's going to help us figure out how to connect so we can get out of here.
All right. First, I've got a question for you, Emily.
Okay.
And this is for the audience as well, of course.
All right.
What percentage of young adults cannot name one good close friend?
Oh my goodness. I'm devastated to know the answer, and I'm certain that it's higher than I'm going to say 35.
Try 69%.
Wow.
69%. To your point of all this technology and social media and loss of community, and some of it is how we got here, and we'll be paying back this price for a long time, probably. But 69% could not name, of young adults, could not name a close friend. And that's who our employers out there, that's who you, that's who the police, that's who corporations are trying to hire. Mm-hmm. How did we get here? So let me give you three main reasons. And this is, if this goes down a rabbit hole, just tell me. We got here because we lost faith, this is my opinion, in the institutions that we have had faith in for years. Let's take number one, and I hate to start with this, but I will, our healthcare resources. Okay, we lost faith in mainstream medicine. And it pains me greatly to say this, because we got to a place where if you and I disagreed, what I said was misinformation. Mm-hmm. So if I didn't agree with what was said, if I questioned it, which is the way science, medical science has always worked, you question to be sure. If you did that during the last 4 to 5 years, you were said to be purveying misinformation. The two most prestigious journals, medical journals, New England Journal and The Lancet, both had to retract articles because they were so excited about slamming ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, anything that might work in the pandemic. They had to retract it because it was just made up data and they didn't recognize it. So you think about public health. I don't even want to talk about Fauci at all. If you look at the CDC, just telling us to isolate, fear, isolate. And then the government has passed, number two, the government. They passed out mandates. They spent $7.5 trillion. They put all the small businesses out of business. They caused inflation and they isolated us. And then there were our own communities is number three. Okay. And the other thing the government did was rule of law. The rule of law was threatened. We had George Floyd. We saw cities on fire. That was okay. Somehow something else over here was an insurrection. So it doesn't make any sense to our minds. So once again, we're confused. We're losing trust. And then there was our communities, our church here split. Mm-hmm. Not formally, but it split on basically crazy political lines, not mm-hmm. spiritual lines. And I love the people, but it got to where you couldn't have an open discussion again. So social groupings, nobody went to medical society meetings anymore. When I was coming along, we had this really strong social grouping of doctors who all got together, medical community, county medical society meetings. They disappeared. You started your group and see how it's grown. And the young doctors who came to that first meeting were so fearful of losing their jobs because of mandates that they couldn't follow their own tenets. Mm-hmm. They had to agree. So we got in this space, and it started before the pandemic, but the pandemic has put us here. Everybody's isolated. 42% of American adults have anxiety or depressive disorders. 20% have mental illness. It is just crazy. And mm-hmm. and pediatricians tell me to you and your the five children, Emily, they say we've got maybe a year and a half to catch these kids up from what happened to them at school mm-hmm. during the pandemic. And because they lost all accountability. What happened? You got on Zoom. And then if you didn't do it, nobody worried about it.
So, well, we didn't take that approach, but, you know, we were also misinformation purveyors. So what do you do? We did not do Zoom school, gratefully. And our school stayed in session as almost the whole time, so which I'm very grateful for. But most people don't have that option. And the way that in our county, the whole going back to school thing, it was more than a disaster. It might have been one of the worst in the state, to be honest. So I agree with you fully. And I think that especially looking at the kids with anxiety, we've talked about that. We talk about that with our Raise Them Well brand a lot. It is staggering. And I do think that we have options as parents. And I think we have options as in our communities, which we're going to talk about. The problem is, I feel, and this is maybe what Janine is going to talk about, is that it can feel very uncomfortable because sometimes you have to feel some of those uncomfortable things in order to help start your community and to create friendships and to do things differently and to combat anxiety and so forth. And so that's very difficult and becoming more difficult as we more time goes on, I would say, because we get very comfortable even in the isolation of, you know, it gets easier just to not have to deal with people because that's what we're used to. And I know the numbers with you, we talked about church attendance. They are still staggeringly low. And our church is fairly young and our pastor is one of our best friends and he's a church planter. So, and he helps others plant churches. So he pays a lot of attention to the numbers and the ways that the rhythms of families and their church attendance. And now I believe he's told me that to call yourself a regular attender, people are coming to church 1 out of 4 weeks and they call that regular attendance, which to me, that is not regular, but that's just how much things have changed. And so Janine, talk to us a little bit more about what happens next in your practice and your dealing with people and helping people through some of these very isolating times. What are some of the approaches that you take to help them push through that idea that being alone is better and to start building community?
Thank you. Yeah, that's the work, isn't it? If we could all just remember that every relationship we have is woven from the one we have with ourselves. And that is kind of my grounding thought, that what can I do? What can I do? Because like you both mentioned, you know, it's very easy to point fingers. And I think everybody can do that, but that doesn't get us anywhere. The real work begins under the hood. It is, why do I feel this way? I think it starts, Emily, with acceptance that this is not my fault, but it is my responsibility, right? It's not about blame. It's not about who did this or who did that, because we could sit in that cesspool all day long and just magnify the filth. However, that's not going to propel us into a forward, on a forward path. So that whole acceptance and saying it's my responsibility, again, it's not my rap, but it is my ride, because we are part of this community and everybody has a responsibility. I think helping individuals to recognize, you know, we talk about, you know, being true to yourself and your authenticity, but that is the work. That is the standing with the uncomfortableness, because even uncomfortable that's familiar is a good place to be, good in quotes, right? Mm-hmm. This feels like me. I'm in this thought process. So familiarity breeds contempt, right? And so we have to kind of get out of those. And it is very easy to close ourselves off. When we recognize, when we stop and we have someone to kind of hold that space for us and say, what do you want more of? And somebody can dream really big and kind of break out of that story that they've been told generations after generations of, it has to be this way for me. This runs in my family. This is just my lot in life. This is the way it is. And possibly so in a lot of ways, but not every way. And I've seen people crack through the smallest of opportunity and realize, wait a minute, I have a whole bunch more choices every day than I thought I ever did, from what I think, to what I say yes to what I say no to whether I have that other cigarette or eat this or eat that. Somebody who sits in that space and realizes, wait a minute, I can live my life by design and not default. And there's my power. And that's the work, because I mentioned with Dr. Joe and some of our other, you know, colleagues in conversation, you know, it really is being a gang of one, and you have to be very okay with one like, not a million likes. I like what I'm doing. I feel good about this. If you're with me, great. If you're not with me, great. Mm-hmm. That kind of letting go and release, I think, is so important to launch from, for us to be able to help our kids, right? It's that whole played over and over again, oxygen mask. But the truth of the matter is that, you know, we talk about that, but what does it really mean to put on the oxygen mask? It means I'm not always right. I'm not a parent who has all the answers just because I said so. I have to heal myself in order to be able to have that ripple effect on others. And so when we can connect in community with people who are like, hey man, I feel the same way. I get it. I or tell me more, just people who hold that what they call compassionate witness space, miracles, seeming miracles seem to happen, and somebody, we elevate each other. So I think that's why going back to the community is so important. It's very humbling. It's very surrendering. It's very filled with curiosity as to why we feel the way that we feel. But that's where our power lies. Our magic is always in the places we don't want to look. It always is.
I think it's interesting too, because what you just said makes so much sense. And a lot of times we just need people to help us process things out loud. And that's not everyone's personality for sure, but generally having just a person to talk to helps us to not carry the weight of the world or to project it onto our most loved ones, our spouse and kids, or whoever that might be, that are not designed to carry that for us either. And so I think, and when we are willing to be known, we can then be loved. And I talk about that a lot, because that's one of the things that my pastor talks about all the time. He says, you can only be loved to the extent that you're known. So if we're carrying all this and feel like that's what we have to do, then and aren't willing to allow people to see and know the broken parts of us, then we carry that weight on our shoulders, and we desire to be known, but we don't allow it because this might not be accepted, or I don't look like the perfect soccer mom, or I don't do such and such the way that I feel like my family expects me to do it. And most of those things are very frivolous in the context of what matters in life. You know, how you cook dinner, if it's perfect every night, who cares? But we put these, well, I can't have people to my house because I'm not a good cook. And so I can't. And we box ourselves into that. And it's like, well, what if we just try? I don't know about y'all, but I love going over to someone's house that has like a couple shoes on the floor, because mine's always like that. So it makes me feel better.
Right. The image of perfection, and that phrase, Emily, we're in our own way. That's so often what it is. It's like we're built walling ourselves in and limiting ourselves and realizing we really are all the same. We're just putting different things out there for the world. And one thing I heard recently that I thought was helpful, and your audience might appreciate this too, and I can't remember where I heard it. It might have been in a movie, but the girlfriend said to her boyfriend, he was upset about something, and she said, "Do you want to be hugged, helped, or heard?" And I love that question, because she's standing in a space of, I'm here for whatever you need, and he had the ability and responsibility, instead of just emoting all over the place, to actually stop and say, you know what? I really don't want to be heard. Just hug me. Mm-hmm. And that is so powerful. So I think that's something that everybody can kind of just practice with a little bit, to give them those tools, especially with kids. You know, I mean, imagine kneeling down to a little 4-year-old who's having a temper tantrum over something and you don't know what it is. I mean, I have 2 grown kids, and being able to say that and helping, giving that child a tool to recognize what it is they're feeling, instead of taking it out on everyone else as a 21-year-old, right? Mm-hmm. Recognizing what they need. So I thought that was great.
That is really good. I really like those specific words too. That's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. So we've got to get that. We agree that everybody's stressed out, right? So, and Janine is director of coaching and has coached for how many years?
About 17.
Yeah. So she's seen a lot of transformation in people, who it's not unusual in the corporate world, Emily, and individual as well, as people will connect with a coach and it'll be 6 months before they really trust the coach. You know, it takes some people a long time some of them it's instantaneous. Some of them it's 6 months, but once they are there, they say what's really on their mind, that's when change occurs. And that's when these, that's when they free themselves, as you girls are talking about. They have to. But in this anxiety moment, we have to have tools, and we all have tools. We've done some podcasts. I told you about the circles masterclasses. So we had five, in January, and they were wonderful. Anxiety, one on anxiety. Cheryl Borchardt did one on anxiety. Janine did one on detox and reset. We had Coach Theis did one on healthy meal planning. Sarah did one on movement and at 6 o'clock in the morning. And I did one on mind well, which was mental health. But I interviewed the marketing communicating director of NAMI. I don't know if you've ever heard of the National Alliance of Mental Illness, North Carolina. And she had PTSD. And we talked about tools that she had to use to get over that. And one of the things that people don't realize is that we all have these tools to fight the anxiety, but you got to find out what they are. For me, it's music and watching sports. Okay. Other people, it's knitting, or it's going and exercising, or taking a long walk, or just talking to your dog, which may be the most successful way to do it. But at any rate, we have to have tools. And I read an article yesterday from England that people that played a musical instrument or sang in a group had much better cognitive function as they age. Mm. It's really interesting. So their involvement with music was related to better cognitive, executive, and work function later on. So the tools, you recognizing the tools are really important to us, to getting us to calm down. Breathing, Janine, I know y'all talk about breathing exercises. And they really do work. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of them. So we came out of this. We didn't trust our neighbor. We thought our neighbor was not a friend, but a killing virus walking down the street without a mask. I mean, that guy and that woman were dangerous to us.
Yeah.
That's what the billboard said.
Yeah.
We got to get over our hesitation. How do we do that? You look the man in the mirror. I love Michael Jackson's music, even though his personality may not have been the greatest. But the man in the mirror, Janine would say, that's where you got to start, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is okay. The man in the mirror. Because you got to have your own back. But then what's the next step? Let's treat our anxiety, our stress. Okay.
Maybe it's being able to ask for help, which is so hard. Being able to ask for help. Hey, could you pick up my kid from carpool? Hey, can I have an extra hour for that deadline? You know, I just can't today, because we feel like failures if we're letting people down. And yet at the end of the day, the water's rising and we're falling under it. We're holding other people up. And so it's that, we have to save ourselves, but being able to ask for help, whether it's in grief. And like you said earlier, Emily, maybe it's just somebody to sit in that space with us, and somebody who's, it's really nice. The healthier we get, the more we exercise, the clearer we get in our bodies, the healthier our gut gets, you know, we become this antenna and we pick up on things that we normally wouldn't be so dulled to, right? Like the nuances of how somebody's speaking, or their body language, or their looks, or maybe what they really need is just, hey, I left a cup of coffee at your front door, right? Mm-hmm. Like for somebody that could be winning the lotto that day, that they mattered. It's not about the expense attached to it. It's not about the length of time attached to it. And so being that for other people also, you know, the 12 step they say is the most important, because you're actually giving back. It's acts of service. It's being there for others. So if even in our low periods, if there are moments where we can reach out to someone and be that, because truly energy is, you know, the reciprocity is there. And so giving is getting in that sense. It's not always easy and we can't, but when we can, if we can be that support for others, it does feel so good. It shifts our own energy. And that is another place that people can start too.
Yeah. And I think that's wonderful. I was thinking about that earlier, because one of the things we can do, even when we don't feel well equipped, is be willing to put ourselves out there, even if it doesn't go as well as we think it will. So very rarely, if you say you run into a mom at preschool drop off all the time, and you're like, wow, she seems like a nice person. You can just do that for the whole year and then she disappears. Or you can risk that maybe you don't have everything in common and say, hey, do you want to grab coffee sometime after we drop our kids off? Is that a risk? Are you having to be a little bit vulnerable? Yes. Might she turn into be your next best friend? Possibly. Maybe that's not likely, but is she going to be like an absolute terrible person that you can't even make it through coffee with, or who's going to judge you majorly about something? That's really unlikely. It happens. We've all heard those stories, but it's very unlikely. Mm-hmm. And if that happens, then you just try again. Like, what do we have to lose if we're so desperate for this community? Can we be the person who attempts to bring the people together? Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite things to do, and this is my personality, is to be a connector for other people too. I love to know a lot of people. And when I'll learn something about someone, I'm like, oh, you have to meet this other person. And you become the connector where, and this web just continues, because you have these relationships and connections. That is what a community actually is. And when you look at that web all together, it's what helps us hold each other up, like you're talking about, Janine. Even when you are that person that's a lot of times doing the connecting, when you have the thing that happens, then those people show up. Mm-hmm. Nobody does magical things necessarily, but I was telling you guys when we got on here, and our listeners can probably notice my voice still sounds really off. We went through the worst round of sickness that we ever have as adults, and then our 5 kids all got stomach bugs, and then I ended up getting pneumonia. So it was absolutely terrible. And I shared that with just a couple of people asking for prayer, and 5 people were offering to bring us groceries and dinner, and some of them did. And I said yes to that because I really needed it at the moment. And, you know, I'll have an opportunity to reciprocate that, not out of obligation, but because that's what friends and communities do. Right. And that doesn't have to be my very best friend in the world in order to do that or to receive it. And so I think that it's just, we've gotten so out of practice, and it's like, we just have to do these things again to start practicing those, right, building those muscles of, yes, vulnerability, but real vulnerability, not this like, what is it called? This like toxic authenticity type of thing where it's like, this is who I am. And if you don't like it, I don't want to be your friend.
Right. We live in a swipe left society, right?
Yes, that's it. Yeah, not that at all. But just being willing to be known better so that we can connect others together. And there's so much fruit that comes out of that. I could tell you 5,000 stories. But I actually did meet a girl who just moved to our city online in a conservative podcast group that we both listened to. She mentioned our city. I was like, well, that's weird. No one ever does that. I invited her to my small women's group, and she came and knew no one. And now we have become friends, and I've helped her get to know the community just a little bit. I mean, my capacity to be anyone's new best friend right now is very limited, but she just needed someone to help her start making those connections. That's it. We can be that. We can do that. Mm-hmm. It's not really that hard.
And I challenge our team to make somebody that they don't know smile or laugh every day. And I literally try to do that. And I'll ask people I don't know, they'll do something, they'll have me wearing something. I was on a plane coming out of Las Vegas, and this 6'6" guy with a Brooklyn Net NBA patch on his shoulder was there sitting across the aisle. And I said, "Are you a basketball player?" And he started talking, and he was really, it turns out he ran a VA hospital. And our audience and our natural inclinations, and you'll understand why I ask him this question, but I ask it in a way that was not, it was not telling which, how I really felt. But I said, "Okay, you're in the VA, you run a VA hospital." I asked him, "How many of the soldiers who were kicked out because they refused to get the vaccine have been allowed back in?" And he said, "Well, they've been allowed back in. A lot of them decided they didn't want to come back in." And I said, "Well, why did you force everybody to get vaccines?" You know, I thought, you know, I wonder what the answer is. He had a great answer I've never heard. He said, "The three most expensive things in the military are the cost of rehabilitation of people who've been injured, the medical cost, then rehab." And he said, "But three times more expensive than any of those and more costly to our military is infectious disease." Because he said, "If we're in Afghanistan and we're on the front and somebody gets XYZ, it's devastating because everybody gets it. And then we don't, they can't fire their rifles." It was an interesting perspective that I never heard anybody, had you ever heard that?
No, not, I mean, that makes sense, but no, I haven't heard that, but you were willing to ask the question that nobody wants to ask, which I love.
Well, we had a great conversation, and he and I enjoyed each other. I gave him my call, our doable card, and said, "Call, we'll talk sometime." So it's, but no, if building that community maybe reaches out, like you said, to somebody that you don't know. And it's amazing to me how many times people will, and Janine is particularly good at this, is it somehow engaging people you don't know.
Well, Janine, as we're closing, why don't you give us a couple ideas of your favorite ways to do that? Because engaging people we don't know is probably what people would, I bet many people would say, what's the most anxiety inducing thing that you could ever do? That's probably like a lot of people's most. Mm. So how would you, just give us some ideas that are low pressure ways that you can quickly engage with a stranger.
You know, I think Dr. Joe always talks about smiling. I think compliments are very nice, and not fake compliments, but if you see something, you say, "You know what? That's a really beautiful sweater you have on." You know, people love that. And that's something that I like to do is, and you just see people light up, like, you know, the Christmas tree in Rockefeller Center. They're like, "Oh my God, thank you. That's so nice." So I think compliments to strangers go a long way. Obviously, there's discernment. So trusting everybody practices discernment on whatever feels right to them. But compliments go a long way. I several times, you know, if I see somebody who can't reach something in the store, or like, "Hey, can I get that for you?" Or it could be anything. The other end of the spectrum is, I remember one time I was standing outside, this is before Uber, trying to get a cab in New York City. And there was a guy in a wheelchair, and people were just rushing by him, and he was trying to get out of the revolving doors. And, you know, he was on the sidewalk. It was 5 o'clock. It was shift change for all the cabbies. And I asked him, I was like, "What happened?" And then he looked at me and he goes, 9/11. And he said, "Thanks for asking."
Wow.
He was just, if you imagine a movie scene with the energy, the momentum, a million people in black suits, cabs, and here's this guy just trying to, and he said, "Thanks for asking." And I never forgot that. So I think just stopping and seeing who's around you, who can you do something for? Because it feels so good not to say, to hold up a banner and say, "I did that for somebody," but just to know that that person, people just want to be seen. They don't want to be fixed. They just want to be seen for a moment in time. And I think that's the greatest thing that we can give somebody.
That's amazing. Well, go ahead.
Can I add one thing? And okay. So if for the young, the kids in the audience, okay, for all you peers, all your peers, Emily, there are organizations that are in the service, and you guys have no time. I understand that. But think about, as time goes by, getting involved with Rotary International, getting involved with, you know, whatever the service is. I serve dinner once, and I lead our group in doing it once a month at Seku Family House in Chapel Hill. That's where all the chemotherapy, immunotherapy, all of the very sick people whose families come from all over, because they got to be there 6 weeks, and they can't afford to stay in a motel for 6 weeks. So there's this wonderful place. We get more out of it than they do. We prepare the food. They are so appreciative. And hearing them, and I wrote a prayer at which, you know, right on February the 20th, 2020, right before the pandemic, had no idea the pandemic was coming. And it is so, it's all about these people, but it's for all of us. They are so appreciative. So giving back, it's hard when you got five children. It's hard.
Still possible though.
But think about that. Look at it. I don't agree with everything International Rotary does, but I love helping people in our community. So that's another way to do what Janine is talking about, I think.
And then be brave. Try the new exercise class. If you don't like it, you don't go back, right? Say yes to the coffee date. If you don't jive with her, like you said, it's okay, right? No harm. Say yes to these things. You know, we're so focused on say no, that's not serving me, swipe to the left. Mm-hmm. Yes, I understand saying no and opting out of things. But sometimes there is a big, bold move in just saying yes and say, what's the worst that can happen? Maybe it's not a good fit in some way. You know, the bereavement groups, the peer support groups, all of those are good places to just dip your toe in. And guess what? Nothing's written in stone. You can always say no again. So, yeah.
Make somebody smile. Make somebody laugh today. That's a challenge, Emily.
I'll work on it, Joe.
It can't be one of the five or we.
I'll work on it. I will try to make someone else smile. Well, you guys are such a breath of fresh air. Always fun to talk to. Love what you guys are doing. And I'll be sure to share more in the show notes about how our audience can connect with you for one-on-one coaching, some of your corporate plans that you have, and the service members, community service members that you are serving, and so forth. You guys are doing so many wonderful things to move us forward, and that's what we need. So thanks again for joining us, and I hope you have a great day.
Thank you, Emily, for having us.